and the fight I assumed was between her and Taryn was actually between Zelly and Taryn. There's no reason to assume Haley was there that day. None at all. I look up at my jailer and smile. "Your plan is doomed," I say, nowhere near as confident as I sound. "It could work, though. I've been silent and visibly preoccupied for only a few minutes, and he's looking more panicky with every second that passes. His Adam's apple is going wild in his throat. The gun waves up and down.
"What do you mean? Tell me what you mean."
He's consumed by his need to know what's in my mind, in case it could harm him. I can use this. Don't look at the gun. Don't let it scare you off course. Put the gun safety catch on and put it down by your feet. Then I'll tell you.
No, no way.
My ankles are tied. You're not at risk if you put it down. It'd take you 5 seconds to pick it up and release the safety thing, and I can hardly run over to you, can I? He shakes his head. A droplet of sweat runs down his forehead. Put it down, or I'm telling you nothing, I say. His mouth sets, a hard line. I start to count. 8 seconds later, he does it. Lays the gun down on the floor. Thank you. Can I do what I need to do next? Control him using nothing but a mixture of withholding and suggestion? The rules have changed as of now, I tell him. I've worked it all out. Everything. You want to keep Melody safe. I get that, but you're going to fail unless I help you. First thing, I want to know who you are. What's your name? This is never going to work. It's impossible. I'm not that lucky.
Leon,
he says.
I'm Leon.
What in the Lord's sacred name are you doing over there? Bonnie Juno's voice. Taryn would have known it anywhere. She didn't rush to answer. She wouldn't have thought it needed saying. She was swimming with her daughter. Anyone familiar with breaststroke and water wouldn't need to ask. Oh, God, it's non Bon Jovi, Zelly murmured. Ugh, doesn't she make you want to not wave but drown? Tara whispered. Fun's over. Time to get out, she told herself. But her body disobeyed the order. She inhaled slowly, wishing she could store the cool, wet, green smell inside her to draw upon whenever her reserves of inner peace were running low. She loved this pool so much, and would have liked to figure out a way to prevent everyone but her and Zelly from using it. She wanted it to be theirs alone. Not much chance of that. It was part of the resort, the only part that club cars couldn't reach on account of there being no paths. Thankfully, most of Swallowtail's clientele saw no reason to venture out to this farthest point. A person shouldn't need to get away from it all when it all was a 5-star spa resort. But Taryn did at least once a day, and this was where she came. Between 30 and 40 lengths, and the urge to strangle all those who had displeased her usually subsided. But now, here was reality, in the shape of Bonnie fucking Juno, lumbering over in her electric blue dress and leopard skin stilettos to spoil everything, and thoughts of strangulation once again filled Taryn's mind. She dipped her head under the water and held her breath until Zelly prodded her. Emerging, she said breathlessly, "Why non Bon Jovi? It sounds funny, but it isn't when you think about it. Makes no sense." Zelly flipped over to float on her back. "As in, John Bon Jovi, mother, star of your appalling CD collection?" "Yeah, I got that part, but apart from the Bon, non-Bon because unattractive, like so unattractive, non-Jovi because far from jovial, put it all together and you get non-Bon Jovi." "Huh." Taryn frowned. "I can't decide if that's brilliant or terrible." Undeterred by receiving no answer to her question, Bonnie Juno was moving closer, teetering on her high heels. She stopped when she reached the edge of the reeds and said, "What even is that? Is it a pond?" "Hello, Bonnie." Taryn hauled herself out of the water and pulled on her robe. "No, though confusingly it's called the pond. It's a natural swimming pool designed to look like a pond, no chemicals." "Natural?" Bonnie wrinkled her nose. "Is it full of frogs and slimy creatures?" "I don't know. I've never met a frog in here, but maybe." "I don't get it. This resort's full of beautiful swimming pools with waiter service at your seat, and you choose to swim here? It must be filthy." "Nope," said Taryn. See the water garden on the other side of the little wall? That's the regeneration zone. Somehow, don't ask me how, that part cleans the part you swim in. All those aquatic plants over there are doing something, eating invasive algae or something like that. It looks horrific to me. Bonnie leaned over to peer in.
From your appearance, I guess you're not a fan of natural, said Zelly, who was still in the water.
Ha! Bonnie seemed to appreciate that. No, I am not, that's for sure. She turned to Taryn. Have you seen Detective Pretty in the last hour?
No.
He missing too? Bonnie pursed her lips. I had my people look into room 324, the Robert and Hope Katz angle. You talked about tracing the credit card they used to reserve the room?
Yeah,
and? Turns out you were right. The card used to secure the booking didn't belong to any Robert or Hope Katz. So those are fake names. I knew it. Yeah, but that's only one side of the story. The other side is who the card used to belong to.
Who?
Asked Zelly. Your daughter's eager to find out, Mrs. Rye, are you? Or do you know already, and is that why you're not asking? I wonder, are the two of you in cahoots?
Who, me and Zelly? Asked Taryn.
No, not you and Zelly. Tell me, did you deliberately point us in the direction of your co-conspirator because you've decided it's all getting too risky for you now, so it's time to cut her loose? Is that why you told us to find out whose card was used?
My co-conspirator? Taryn laughed.
I promise you, the last time I met anyone I wanted to be in a cahoot with was more than a decade ago. I had fewer wrinkles, fewer chins. Shit, those were the days.
Bonnie half-smiled.
I guess the state of non-bon comes to us all in the fullness of time.
There is no way you could have heard that, Zelly protested.
And yet I did, so go figure.
I apologize for my daughter's rudeness, said Taryn. She gets it from her father. What name was on the credit card?
Rihanna Briggs.
I thought you were going to say Detective Pretty. Zelly sounded disappointed.
Rihanna? Said Taryn.
Wow.
Yeah, said Bonnie. She wasn't taken by force, nor did she leave in floods of tears because the boss man yelled at her.
She ran before the cops could find out she was part of it.
Did this mean what Taryn thought it meant? She needed to get away from Bonnie so that she could think, away from Zelly too. So now we leave no stone unturned in our hunt for that lying, good-for-nothing schemer, said Bonnie, in the righteous tone that Taryn knew so well from her TV show. Because wherever she is, that's where we'll find Kara Burrows, hopefully not too late to save her.
Taryn and Zelly exchanged a look. You think Rihanna took Kara? Taryn asked.
Yes, I do, said Bonnie Juno.
Leon.
He nods.
Surname? Why do you need to know that? If I tell you that, he breaks off with a grimace. Look, how about if I tell you my nickname instead of my last name? Since childhood, it's Dandy. The people I'm close to call me Dandy.
I hear the girl's voice in my head. I spilled coke on Poggy and Doodle Dandy. Melody's voice.
Dandy? Yeah, because of Leon being like Lion. When I was little, my mom used to say I was her dandelion. Dandelion, you know.
He looks embarrassed. It got shortened to Dandy and it stuck.
And your surname, please?
Kara, come on, I'm trying to cooperate with you, but
no, you're trying to compromise with me, different thing. I don't want to compromise. I want you to answer my questions, all of them. And you're not thinking straight. You've decided I'll be able to trace you by your surname, but not by Dandy. That's silly. You think if there's an appeal for information about a man called Leon, known as Dandy, people won't phone in and name you? Of course they will. Surname and all. So, you might as well tell me.
Kara, I can't.
Then I won't tell you what I've realized, and how it's going to trip you up and land you in prison for a long time. His eyes dart to and fro.
I'd like to tell you, but I can't.
He looks incredulous suddenly, as if something impossible to believe has been suggested by a voice only he can hear.
You think I want to keep a pregnant woman locked up here? Away from her family? Jesus, Kara! I like you. You seem like a great person.
Kara Burrows.
Is she safe? Did you write that?
What?
Did you write it on a piece of paper and put it in the pot in the crystal grotto?
No.
For some reason, I believe him. But if he didn't write it, who did? Who else could have done it? Something I don't understand, I say. You got Melody out of Swallowtail double-quick once you knew I'd heard her mention Poggy. But why take the risk of having her there in the first place? It's a holiday resort full of people. She's supposed to be dead. Why not hide her somewhere where she can scream Poggy at the top of her voice from now till Christmas? Why not keep her here, for instance?
We did.
Leon slides down the wall into a seated position.
Right here in this trailer. And others. For years.
I inhale sharply. I knew, but it's still a shock to hear him confirm it. So the girl I saw was Melody Charper.
She's alive. Yes.
Her parents didn't murder her.
No, they didn't. But they would have if we hadn't gotten her out.
Who's we? He shakes his head.
Sorry. You'll get no names from me. Believe it or not, all the people involved in the rescue plan are good people. We did what we did to save Melody's life. It was necessary.
You didn't answer my question. Why take her to a spa resort and risk exposure?
How would you feel if you'd been shut up in trailers for 7 years, never allowed outside, never going on vacation?
Ask me in 7 years. By then I'm bound to know the answer, unless I'm dead. Saying these things aloud makes me feel as if they can't happen in real life.
We didn't think it was a risk. Leon sighs. Melody's face has changed so much. She wasn't a pudgy little kid anymore. She was a willowy, beautiful teenage girl. I didn't think there was a snowball in hell chance of anyone recognizing her.
And you made her call herself Haley, and wear a fake scalp that covered her one distinguishing mark just to be sure. You made her pretend to have terminal cancer. Some holiday that must have been for her.
She knew not to take Poggy out of our room, or to mention him. She only did because you walking into the room woke her from a deep sleep.
And spoiled everything.
I know.
But I'm interested. What was the plan you all made after I was inconsiderate enough to cross your path? Kidnap me? Get me locked up quick?
That was the first step. That makes sense. But what then?
The way I see it, there aren't many options. Either you kill me, but no, that won't work. Taryn Fry knows everything I saw and heard, and I doubt she'll let it drop, especially not with me missing.
Unless you're going to kill her, too. I don't want to kill anyone. I never have, and I hope I never will.
Then what? They must have thought beyond the very first stage of getting me safely locked away. What would I be thinking, in Dandy Leon's position? What plan would I make? If Melody's not dead, that means her parents shouldn't be in jail. But if they get out, then she has to go and live with them again. She's still a minor. I'm not sure how a judge would deal with a minor who said, I loathe my parents. Please, can I live in a shabby trailer with gun-toting Leon instead? He might say, sorry, off you go with Mum and Dad.
You can't let that happen,
I say slowly. Not when you've gone to such lengths to fake her murder in order to get her away from them. Oh, God. I can think of only one possibility.
Is the plan to keep me here until Melody's an adult?
Leon says nothing, stares down at the floor.
Then you let me go, and I go home to my family, who are just starting to get over my death.
They've assumed I'm dead by this point and move on with their lives. And you and your fellow plotters are safe. I know Melody's alive, but how can I prove it? Any of it, when I don't know who you are? Was that the idea? Leon shakes his head. He looks tired, as if he can't be bothered with our battle of wills anymore.
The idea is to get plastic surgery for Melody, he says. It's going to happen soon. A month or so, we think. 6 at the most. It's taken this long to find someone whose discretion we can rely on.
To get rid of the telltale brown patch of skin, I say. He nods.
Also make a few other changes to her face, so it's further from the one online that all the obsessive freaks have learned by heart. Once the surgery was done, we could have let you go. You wouldn't have recognized Melody if you'd seen her again, and you wouldn't have known who I was. No way in hell you could have found out.
But now, because I've made you tell me that you're Leon, the dandelion, you're going to have to kill me. And I've brought it all on myself, correct? No response. I want him to deny it, even if I wouldn't believe him. I swallow down the fear that burns my throat and say, "Kill me if you want. But then you don't get my help with avoiding that long spell behind bars. Your choice." He lunges for the gun, grabs it and points it at me. I lurch backward, banging my shoulder against something. "Tell me what you know, or think you know, right now, or I shoot." "You can do this, Kara. Don't let him distract you." "No, I told you, we're following my rules now, not yours." He moves to touch the side of his head and knocks the gun against it, as if he forgot it was in his hand. "Jesus Christ," he bellows. He has no idea what he's doing anymore. "Let's start again," I say. "What's your name? Leon what?"
"Revel. Leon Revel, okay? Are you satisfied now?"
Detective Orwin Pretty was hearing in great detail about a dog. It was interesting, but not in the way the speaker intended. The dog's name was Stop It.
"Because he was so boisterous as a puppy, and I kept having to yell, 'Stop it, stop it!' And after a while, he started to react as if that was his name, so I thought, might as well change it."
And its owner was Janelle Davis, Rihanna Briggs's best friend. She looked around 50, tall, white, athletic, with laughter lines around her eyes, chin-length, dark brown hair, and a fringe that was dyed orangey-red, as if someone had set fire to it at the front. Her clothes were stylish but dirty, with muddy paw prints visible on her white linen trousers. She and Pretty were sitting out on the veranda of her small house in Scottsdale, drinking homemade lemonade that was so good it almost made up for the endless dog talk. Stop It, who looked a lot like an overgrown hairy rat, was asleep on Davis's lap. Each time she moved, he woke up and growled, then fell instantly back to sleep. It was beyond Pretty why anyone would want a thing like that in their life. He tried again to steer the conversation in a useful direction.
"So you said Rihanna was Stop It's godmother?"
It wasn't what Davis had said, but Pretty was too embarrassed to repeat her exact words.
"No, no, I'm not crazy. Oh, darn it, sorry, darling."
She stroked the dog, who had snarled in response to her laughing, and continued in a whisper. "He's such a friendly boy when he's not tired, but if he's trying to sleep and I disturb him, he makes his displeasure known."
"You were saying about Rihanna?"
"So I was." Her voice was back at normal volume. "Well, I'm sure even a non-dog owner like you would know that dogs don't have godmothers. I mean, there's no official religious ceremony or anything. That's why I thought it'd be kind of neat to invent a new word. Dogmother. Ree's his dogmother. We made up our own little ceremony. It was so cool, really. You should have seen it. See, Stop It absolutely adores tennis balls, but only when they're brand new and bright lemon yellow."
"Excuse me, ma'am. Like I said, I really don't have too much time, so if I could ask you again, you're sure you haven't seen or heard from Rihanna at all these past few days?"
Before setting off from Swallowtail, Pretty had searched the internet for anyone connected to the Melody Choppa case who went by the name of Dandy. He'd found nothing. Then, still following Taryn Fry's instructions, he'd started on Rihanna Briggs. Thanks to her lax Facebook security, he discovered Janelle Davis and was able to glean from comments and photos that she and Rihanna were close friends who went back years. Finding Davis had been easy enough, if only talking to her were the same.
"I'm sure," she said, "but I'll tell you when I will hear from her. Wednesday, that's Stop It's birthday, and Ree never misses a year. Last year she got him a water bowl with his name painted on it. Stop It Nicodemus Davis."
Nicodemus? Unbelievable.
"Wednesday's my birthday, too,"
said Pretty, holding back a sigh. Typical. The inflated furry rat was his spirit animal.
"Really?"
Davis emitted a squeal of delight.
"Stop it, Pop It. Our visitor here has a birthday same day as you. Isn't that an incredible coincidence?"
The dog opened one eye and growled. "Oh, Janelle, you were such a terrible mother." Davis admonished herself. "Each time the poor boy falls asleep, you wake him up. What kind of mama does that?"
So, Rihanna's due to come here Wednesday?
Pretty asked. Oh, yeah, she wouldn't miss a certain little boy's birthday, not for the world. I'm not saying his name because he wakes up when I do. As to where Rhea is right now.
Davis shrugged. Maybe that pig-headed boss of hers went too far and pushed her over the limit. She could be off hunting for a new job, and not a minute too soon. I've been telling her for years she could get out. I've never met Dane Williamson, but he sounds like an asshole. Nice as pie to anyone he needs to impress, awful to those lower down in the pecking order. I hate that type.
I'm surprised you're not more worried about Rihanna.
Pretty told her.
I've looked at your Facebook interactions. The two of you normally communicate several times a day, but there's been nothing since October 11th. That doesn't strike you as strange?
Well, I guess.
Davis looked momentarily confused. Then she narrowed her eyes and grinned.
You know what? Maybe Ree's met a nice guy and she's busy banging his brains out. That would be great. She's had no action at all since breaking up with DeRay, or I should say, since he broke up with her. Cast her aside like she was garbage. That man well and truly broke her heart. Stop it adored him, too, and missed him so much after he left, pined for months. But thinking about it, when Ree first met DeRay, I couldn't get a hold of her for about a week and a half. She was drifting above it all in a haze of loved-up bliss. I'll bet that's what's going on now.
Stop it, Nicodemus, DeRay, three unusual names. On a whim, Pretty said,
Ms. Davis, do you know of anybody called Dandy or with Dandy as a nickname?
Dandy.
She frowned and chewed her lip.
Yeah.
You do?
Hold on, it'll come to me. I've heard that name not too long ago. Dandy. Oh, I've got it.
She gave Pretty a knowing look.
Is that him?
Who?
Ree's new man. Come on, spill.
I have no idea who Dandy is. That's why I asked you.
I'm not sure I believe you, Detective. You have an inscrutable face. People must tell you a lot.
No, never.
Huh. Well, a few weeks ago, Rhea and I and a certain little boy, she nodded down at the dog, were at a barbecue and Rhea took a call and acted kind of private about it, which was unusual for her. She doesn't normally hide anything from me. But this time she said, Hey, Dandy, and then hurried off to stand by a tree quite away from where I was, like she didn't want me to overhear the conversation. When she reappeared, looking all fake innocent, I said, So who's this Dandy then? And she lied about it.
Davis laughed.
Ree never lies, but I swear she did that day. She said, Not Dandy, Andy, from work. And I said, Oh, yeah? So how come I've never heard you mention an Andy at work? And she sort of dodged the question. I didn't push it. Figured she'd tell me in her own time.
But now it's all fallen into place.
She's got a new man in her life, Dandy, and she's gone off somewhere with him. Like I said, she'll be back by Wednesday. No way she'd miss a very important birthday party.
And you know nothing about Dandy?
Nothing at all. I just heard her say the name. That's literally all I can tell you.
How long have you and Rihanna been friends?
Long time, since childhood. We lived on the same street in Philadelphia, went to the same...
Stoppet raised his head and snarled loudly.
Shh!
Davis tapped his head gently with the flat of her hand. Philadelphia. The word rolled around Pretty's mind. Melody Choppa had been born in Philadelphia, lived in Philadelphia, been murdered in Philadelphia.
So, how come you and Rihanna both ended up in Arizona?
My ex got a job here. I followed him, and then, a couple of years later, re-followed me. She'd been to visit a few times and loved it, loved the climate, and then...
Abruptly, Davis broke off.
What?
Said Pretty.
You were going to say something else?
I told you already she moved out here a few years ago.
How many years?
When she moved? Let's see. It was after Chad and I broke up, and around the same time I thought of getting a dog, and Rhea and DeRay got married fall 2014. So it must have been fall of 2013. October, I think.
Miss Davis, I'd appreciate it if you could tell me whatever it was you decided not to say before. If Rihanna's in any kind of trouble, it might help us to find her.
Well, she doesn't like to talk about it, but I guess that doesn't mean you and I can't. It's not like it's a secret.
Reed did jury service in Philadelphia years ago. This was like 15 years or something. I don't remember precisely. It was a murder case. Man who'd strangled his wife, and before you ask, that's all I know. Reed told me no other identifying details, really did not want to talk about it. But I know she found it traumatic. She was 100% certain the guy was guilty, but the defense team charmed the other jurors and he got acquitted. It was unbearable to watch, she said, unbearable to be part of, though obviously it wasn't her fault. She and only one other woman had said guilty from the start and stood their ground. Others had been all for convicting him at first, but then allowed themselves to be talked around.
And Rihanna found this experience upsetting?
Oh, boy! She kept going over and over it, blaming herself, saying she didn't do enough to persuade the other jurors, though it was clear to me she'd done all she could. She's too sensitive for her own good, really.
And this was around 15 years ago?
That's right, said Davis.
Then I don't understand,
Pretty said.
If it was part of why she wanted to leave Philadelphia, why'd she only move to Arizona 4 years ago? Why wait 10 years?
Oh, I see. No, she was okay at first. Then she got called for jury service a second time. You can imagine the effect that had on her.
Jury service in 2013. The trial of Annette and Naldo Chapa? Pretty wondered.
She called me in tears, asked if she could move in with me for a while. I said, sure, why not? That enabled her to excuse herself from jury service on the grounds that she had an arrangement to move to Arizona, like, the following week. She didn't tell them when she'd made that arrangement or why, asked me to pretend we'd planned it months earlier.
So she didn't actually do a second stint of jury service?
Pretty abandoned his promising theory.
No, she couldn't have handled that at all. She handed in her notice that very day and came out here. Boy, all these serious questions.
Janelle Davis shuddered.
I'm getting a little concerned. Reed's okay, right? I mean, she's not in danger from some psycho guy who should have been locked up years ago, is she? I've got to tell you, her romantic judgment has never been the best.
We have no reason to think she's come to harm,
said Pretty.
We just need to find her.
Soon as you do, will you have her call me?
I'll pass on the message.
I guess you'd better remind her about a certain little boy's birthday, too, if you do find her.
Davis pointed at Stop It.
Like I say, she wouldn't normally forget, but if something freaky's going on in her life, who knows?
Right.
Time to finish off that lemonade and leave.
He'll know if she's not there for his party.
Davis muttered more to herself than to Pretty.
He knows all our special occasion traditions, and he knows Ree's always there. What will I do if she hasn't showed up by Wednesday?
Leon Revel, I repeat. So, what, you're Jeff Revel's brother? Christie's brother-in-law?
Jeff's cousin.
He puts the gun down and covers his face with his hands. He might be crying. Things are starting to make sense. I think it through out loud. Christie and Jeff live next door to the Chapas, who were psychologically abusive parents. They could see that if they didn't take action, Annette and Naldo would end up killing Melody. They couldn't go to the authorities because the kind of mental torture I've been reading about in Melody's book is very hard to prove, and 7-year-old Melody would probably have been too scared to speak out against her parents. So Christie and Jeff roped you in and made a plan. Make Melody disappear, fake her murder, allow suspicion to fall first on Christie, that was clever, but then have proof emerge that it was Annette and Naldo Chapa and, as if by magic, they get carted off to prison for the rest of their natural lives. Nothing from Leon. He's still got his face covered up. Well? Am I right? I'm not sure I need an answer. How can I be wrong? There's nothing else that could explain everything. Finally, he moves his hands and looks at me.
You're right,
he says almost inaudibly. Time to fake some kindness. Leon, listen. You wish I hadn't walked into your hotel room. I wish the same thing. It's not my fault I did, and it's not your fault either. We've ended up where we are by accident, but it can still be okay. Nobody needs to know about any of this, I swear to you. I'll tell nobody about you or these last few days. I'll say I don't remember where I've been, that I was wrong about seeing Melody. All I want in return is to send a message to my kids on Instagram saying I'm safe and well. You can type it for me, I won't touch the computer. His eyes flit around the trailer. I don't think he's been listening. If you do that for me, I'll be grateful, won't I? Leon, look at me. Think about the kind of person you know I am. I'm just a mum who loves her kids and wants to get back to them. I don't want any trouble. Why would I? I don't want anything bad to happen to Melody. He's looking at me more steadily now. Do I think that what you, Christy and Jeff did was the right thing to do? No. I have to be honest and admit that I don't. If we hadn't done it, they'd have killed her. Haven't you read enough of Chris? He stops, but it's too late. Christy's book. So Christy Revel wrote it. We wait. The story belongs to Melody, Leon says eventually. It's hers. Christy only wrote it down. She converted it into what it is now. I knew it, not only from the too polished writing style, but also the choice of words. The paper I found in the crystal grotto pot said, "Do Mom and Dad love me?" In the book, it's always my parents or my mother and father. If it was that bad for Melody at home, you could have made the police or social services take it seriously. I can't believe that was impossible. Did any of you even try?
You're naive if you believe that, Kara. Seriously.
Look, I might not agree with what you did, but I agree that Melody's better off if she never has to see her parents again.
Yes, she is.
Which is why I won't breathe a word about this to anyone once you let me go.
Let you go?
He looks confused.
Shit, Kara, I can't. I thought you just wanted to send a message to your kids.
That first. Then you're going to let me walk out of here. You're going to set me free. And you'll tell Jeff and Christy and Melody that none of you has anything to fear from me. Because that's the truth. If you're worried about admitting you let me go, you can say I escaped. Maybe you could say I threatened you. If you didn't let me go, I wouldn't tell you the thing you need to know to keep all three of you out of prison. You, Jeff, and Christy.
You did threaten me,
Leon says in a dull voice. Leon, if you do this for me, help me tell my kids I'm okay and then let me go. I swear I'll tell you what you need to know. You have to trust me. Please? He stands, picks up the gun, doesn't point it at me.
The message. Yeah, I can do that, I guess. But I can't let you go, Kara.
Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Thank you, I say. For now, the message is enough. It's progress, significant progress. Be patient, Kara.
No messages can be sent from this computer, though, because it's registered in my name. I've got an iPad that can't be traced back to me. I'll go get it.
Thank you. I really appreciate this, Leon. A few seconds later, I'm alone in the trailer, locked in. My ankles are bound, but my wrists are untied. He forgot to take the precaution of tying them before he left. Nothing I can do but sit tight. Even if I could somehow use my hands to get out of here, I wouldn't be able to do it in time. Not before he's back with the iPad. Think. Work it out. There has to be a way. I thought he'd agree to let me go, but maybe this is better. I have nothing to tell him that will help him. If he'd agreed to set me free in exchange for useful information, he would soon have discovered my lie. That was a stupid, crazy plan, born out of desperation. Now, on the other hand, I hear the key again. The door opens. Dandy the Lion is back with the iPad. I was expecting one the same size as the one I had at Swallowtail, but this is twice the size, not a mini. Where did he get it from? His car outside?
Okay, so what do I do?
He's holding the iPad in his left hand, the gun sticking out of his pocket.
Instagram, right?
He walks over and sits down next to me. Thank you. Thank you so much. I start to cry. It's partly relief and partly horror at my own reaction. My gratitude is real.
Look away while I type in my code.
I avert my eyes, the gun still in his pocket, but the wrong one. I'd have to reach around him to grab it.
Okay, you can look now. Here's Instagram. I'll need your ID and password.
Diskendo79's my username. I spell it out. Password's my name, then 79, all letters lowercase.
Here we are,
says Leon. Now is my chance. If I don't take it, I might not get another. I stiffen my body and gasp.
What? He says. What is it?
Did you hear that? Outside?
What? Tell me.
A voice, it sounded so close.
I didn't hear it.
How could you not hear it? It must have come from right outside. Are they here? I try to sound as frightened as I can. They're here, aren't they? Jeff and Christy, they're here to kill me. You called them. You're too much of a coward to do it yourself.
Kara, calm down.
I heard a voice, Leon. I didn't imagine it. I heard someone say, Helen.
Helen?
Oh, shit. Shit, shit. I said the wrong name. Not Helen. Something similar. Fear and adrenaline are messing with my memory. No, I can still save this. I have to. My heart feels as if it's swollen to twice its usual size and is pushing to burst out of my throat. What's the right name? You had it a few minutes ago. Haley, that's it. Not Helen, I say. Haley, that was the name.
Are you sure?
His eyes widen suddenly, full of fear. I think so. Why did I say that? I should have said yes, I'm positive, but I don't trust my memory now after such a serious slip-up. I need buttons, like my hire car. M1, M2, one for Haley, one for Helen. No, none for Helen. There is no Helen. What's wrong with me? Am I going crazy? Memory button 1, memory button 2. I frown as something occurs to me. A strange detail. Does it change anything? I'm not sure, but it strikes me as odd. It's such a tiny, niggly detail, and yet... Leon's put down the iPad. He's holding me by my arms, shaking me.
Kara, are you sure they said Haley?
Yes, I whisper, and then shh, as if I'm still trying to listen to something outside the trailer. He believes me. Releasing my arms, he heads for the trailer door, treading slowly and gently so that no one outside can hear him. As if he hasn't got a prisoner to guard. As if we're an ordinary married couple and our burglar alarm has gone off in the middle of the night. He's the brave husband, creeping downstairs to check. I calculate right. He never saw me talking to Taryn and Zelly at Swallowtail. He and Melody left too soon after I got there. As far as he's aware, there's no way I could know about Haley. At the door, he pulls his gun out of his pocket, armed against the outside world, off in search of the imaginary target I created for him. He's gone. I'm alone. The door's closed, but he didn't lock it. He didn't lock the door. I hear running footsteps. The iPad unlocked. The door unlocked. What should I do? I have so little time. Maybe no more than seconds. The iPad first. I grab it and start to type a comment beneath Jess's latest photo. I'm in trailer, don't know where. 2 hours, guess, from Swallowtail. Tell police, interview Jeff Revel, colleague, again. REM, bloody sock in car. Car seat move forward. Did Christy MO? I hear footsteps again. Closer, walking around the trailer, crunching on something. This is crazy. I'm typing when I should be getting the hell out of here. I drop the iPad and start work on the ropes around my ankles. It's easier than I expected. A simple series of knots. I don't need ingenuity or strength, only patience. Hard when he could reappear any second. By the time I've undone all the knots, the noise outside has stopped. No footsteps. Nothing. I stand up, my legs are in agony from being tied together for so long, and I fall after my first 3 steps. Get up, get out! Ignoring the pain, I force myself back onto my feet, take a step, then another. I'm nearly at the door when I think about Jess and Ollie. Are they lying awake at night, wondering if I'm dead? Moving as quick as I can, I go back to the iPad, praying it won't have switched itself off. If I need the access code, I'm in trouble. The screen's darker, but not black. I tap it, and it lights up again. There's my unfinished comment still sitting in the box. What should I add? That I'm fine? Safe? What if I'm not? What if Leon shoots me as I try to run away? His name. Leon, or Dandy. That's the most important thing to add. And Haley. Fake Haley with her fake cancer. I'm about to start typing again when I hear footsteps in the distance. Think, Kara. Move. My heart thumping like a wild thing, I post my comment as it is. Incomplete. It's the best I can do. Then I run, to the door, out of the trailer, in a random direction. Past an electricity pylon, into a cluster of trees. There are no other trailers, no houses that I can see. I stop suddenly, frozen by the enormity of what I've just done. My breath feels dangerously audible and visible, as if it's announcing my presence to everyone for miles around. Move. Can't stand still. He'll run after me and catch me. When I start to run again, my brain screams at me to stop, that it's a trap. I'm not running away from him, but somehow toward him. Not knowing where he is, I won't be able to avoid running smack bang into him at any second. The idea is so terrifying, it's almost enough to make me want to turn back.
At least when I was locked up and held at gunpoint in the trailer, I knew I would see him. Now, when I might not, a surprise glimpse of him in the distance would be enough to stop my heart. Ignoring all threats from the panicked voice in my head, that he will step out from behind the next tall cactus, or the next rock, or the next, I run and run. I have to believe I'll get back safely. If I could only know where he is, that he's behind me, not ahead. Think about something else. I think about Jess. What if she reads my message and thinks I didn't finish it because something stopped me? A knife in the gut or a bullet through the brain? That's what I'd think. The idea makes me want to howl, but I can't risk Leon hearing me. I'm not dead, Jess. I'm going to live. I'm on my way home.
Pretty was deleting messages from Sanders when his phone buzzed with a new call. No caller ID. He was in the back of a cab, nearly at Swallowtail. He expected it to be Sanders, but the voice was a woman's. Orwin, it's Lynn. I got your message.
Lynn?
You want the full title? Assistant Special Agent Lynn Kirschmeier, FBI.
I know, I didn't think you'd call back so soon.
Yeah, this Melody Choppa story was on our radar before I got your message. Bonnie Juno's in town, huh?
Yeah, lucky us.
We need to talk, Lynn said. Where are you? At the Swallowtail Resort and Spa?
That's where I'm supposed to be.
And where Bryce Sanders is, yes?
Yeah, my superior officer.
A sharp drawing in of breath from Lynn. Life doesn't always go the way we want it to, she said. Pretty, Lynn Kirschmeier, and Sanders had all started in the police at the same time. It wasn't long before it became obvious to Pretty that Sanders had no principles. He was a moral vacuum, a predator without conscience, who did whatever he felt like doing at any given time. He violently assaulted those he arrested if they looked at him the wrong way, took bribes, some of them sexual, and made it clear, to Pretty at least, that he had a lot of fun doing all these things. He seemed, from the start, proud of his bad behavior, and told Pretty there was nothing he could do about it. It would be Sanders' word against his if he were to say anything, and it was obvious who'd be believed. That Pretty knew Sanders would present a more compelling version of events than his own, more truthful one, only made him hate the man more. Then one day, Lynn Kirschmeier had confided in Pretty. Thanks to a private investigator, she had proof that Sanders had been making a pile of money on the side, selling drugs he'd seized from a suspect's apartment. She'd asked Pretty if he knew anything about Sanders' antics, anything he'd be willing to share. Pretty told her all the details he'd been bottling up for nearly a year. The knowledge that there existed concrete evidence against Sanders changed everything for him. But Lynn, it turned out, wanted to offer Sanders a less humiliating way out. With an unhappy Pretty by her side, she told Sanders that if he left the police and left Arizona and never came back, she'd bury the incriminating evidence and make sure it never surfaced. Pretty didn't agree with her way of handling it, but he could see the logic. Handsome, blonde, charming Bryce Sanders, in spite of his cruel streak and non-existent morals, was popular with his colleagues, more so than either Lynn or Pretty. They'll never forget we did it, Orwin, she'd said. Even those who think we did the right thing, they'll feel differently about us. It'll be a black mark against us forever. Pretty had convinced himself that he didn't mind doing it Lynn's way. Sanders would be gone, never to return. That was all that mattered. Except he did return. Lynn Kirschmeier joined the FBI, and once she'd been out of the way for a few years, back Sanders came, with the same detestable, charming smile all over his perfect boy-next-door face. The Paradise Valley Police Force could hardly contain its excitement, especially the women. Sanders must have known Lynn would say nothing now. No way she'd risk her stellar career as an FBI agent. If she told the truth, Sanders would too. He'd go public with her failure to report his crimes all those years ago. Pretty, if asked, would have to reveal that yes, Lynn Kirschmeier had known Sanders had stolen drugs and then profited from their sale, and that he'd known too. Pretty would willingly have trashed his own career for the sake of ruining Sanders, but he couldn't bring himself to do that to Lynn, who, he suspected, must have known for some time now that Sanders was back,
and had conspicuously failed to contact Pretty to discuss what they ought to do about it, about as conspicuously as he'd failed to contact her.
"Don't worry, Opie. I'm a changed man,"
Sanders had said to Pretty with a wink, soon after reappearing.
"This time I'm going to be good as gold."
When he'd heard those words, Pretty had known not only that Sanders didn't mean them, but also that his intended meaning was the precise opposite. What he was trying to say, knowing Pretty would understand the true message, was, "You'll see nothing, you'll be able to prove nothing, but I'll be doing whatever the fuck I want, as I always do." On the surface, Sanders had indeed been good as gold since his return. So good, he recently got the promotion Pretty had earned.
"You'll be next, bud,"
he'd consoled Pretty with fake magnanimity. Or at least, Pretty assumed it was fake. After what he and Lynn had done, he couldn't believe Sanders' friendliness to him was genuine. He wasn't the forgiving sort. No. He'd worked out that he could wound Pretty more effectively by pretending to be his best pal, appearing to play by the rules, and forcing Pretty to fake his side of an apparently great working relationship. Pretty's response to Sanders being promoted above him was to stop caring about anything and everything that related to work. From now on, he'd take his paycheck and put no heart or initiative at all into his job, until he thought of something else he could do. He'd found that easy until the swallowtail thing cropped up. Most of what his workdays threw at him was pretty unoriginal. This Melody Choppa business was different. He couldn't think of a single scenario to explain and reconcile all that seemed to be happening here. That frustrated him and made him want to try and find the answer. "Meet me at Cartel Coffee Lab, 7124 East 5th Avenue in Scottsdale, soon as you can." Lynn was gone before Pretty could answer. He understood. Together, they'd attempted a heroic act that had failed, and now she didn't want to talk to him any more than he wanted to talk to her. He told the cab driver the new destination, then keyed "Choppa murder trial" into the search box on his phone screen. He'd been right. Annette and Naldo Choppa had stood trial in 2013, June of that year. But not in Philadelphia, as he had assumed. Instead, their trial had taken place in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania, after it had been decided they were unlikely to get a fair hearing in their home city. Bonnie Juno's belief in their guilt had proved contagious all over the country, but nowhere more than in Philadelphia, where some people had started wearing T-shirts emblazoned with Juno's motto of the moment, "Guilty as Hell," with Melody R.I.P. in smaller letters underneath. Was it crazy that he now believed it might be true? That Lilith McNair and Kara Burrows might have seen 14-year-old Melody purely because an FBI agent was taking an interest? Probably. Chances were, Kirschmeyer was only interested in the missing British tourist angle. If the Choppas were tried in Lehigh County, then Rihanna Briggs, who lived in Philadelphia at the time, wouldn't have been in the running for that particular jury, even if she hadn't opted out by moving to Arizona. No connection there, then. So why did it feel as if there had to be one? Pretty typed, "Rihanna Briggs, murder trial, Philadelphia," into the search box. Here we go. Rihanna Briggs was one of several jurors who had given interviews to the press after a man named Benjamin Chalfont had walked free from a Philadelphia court acquitted of murder by strangulation of his wife, Elissa. Reading small print in a moving vehicle was making Pretty feel nauseous. He pressed the button to open the window a little. There had to be a link, via Rihanna Briggs, between this Chalfont case and the Choppas. Or maybe there didn't. Either way, Pretty wasn't ready to give up. He keyed "Benjamin Chalfont Melody Choppa" into the search box and pressed return. No joy. He tried every combination of names he could think of. Elissa and Annette, Naldo and Rihanna. Nothing.
"Excuse me," said the cab driver. "Are we here?"
Pretty looked up.
"Not yet. The road's blocked up ahead, see? So you can either get out and walk one block that way."
He stuck his arm out of the window and pointed.
"Or I can drive you to the door, but it's going to take a while longer." "Longer's okay,"
said Pretty, who wasn't done searching yet. "Besides, weren't cabs supposed to take you right to where you wanted to go?"
What about Jeff and Chrissy Reville? They never stood trial for anything, but still, it was worth a shot. You never knew where you might find a connection. He put Jeff Reville Benjamin Chalfant into the search box and pressed return. Next, he'd try in conjunction with Chalfant's name, Victor Soutar, then Larry Biedman, or maybe Nate Appleyard, all the names he'd read while refreshing his memory of the Melody Chapa case last night. Deep in his bones, Pretty couldn't believe Rihanna Briggs' experience as a juror in Philadelphia. So traumatic, it ultimately made her relocate to Arizona, wasn't connected to Melody somehow. Benjamin Chalfant, Annette and Naldo Chapa. Two murder trials, both the same year, both in Pennsylvania, both with a connection to Rihanna Briggs. The search results appeared on the screen. Pretty did a double take.
Holy freaking hell,
he breathed. He blinked and looked again. Still there. He clicked on the top result and started to read, his heart pounding. The driver had to tell him twice that they'd arrived at Cartel Coffee Lab. Pretty got out of the cab. He rotated his right shoulder, which had stiffened up during the ride, too much jabbing at his phone with his thumb. There was only one question he wanted answered now. Did Assistant Agent Lynn Kirschmeier already know, or was he about to give her the shock of her life?
Sometimes I think I'd like to see my parents again. Not in the real world, but in a safe, fantasy way, where I'd know they couldn't harm me. There are questions I'd like to ask them. By them, I guess I mean my mother. She's the one with the answers. I'm not sure my father ever understood any of it. Not even his own part in it. I'd ask about the time my mother was waiting for me after school, when she was supposed to be working in a place called Oakmont. I was surprised to see her, and for once, she looked happy to see me. She told me to sit in the front seat. And as we drove home, she said, "So, I hear you have a boyfriend." She said it in a confiding, best pal tone I'd never heard her use before. I was 6 years old. Of course I didn't have a boyfriend. The whole idea scared me. Sharona, in my class, had told everybody that Woody Finnegan was her boyfriend, and they'd walked around the playground holding hands a few times and looking pleased with themselves, as if they knew a secret the rest of us didn't. We all knew it was only pretend, but it still made me feel horrible to think about it. What if he tried to kiss her, and she couldn't make him stop? What if he had stinky breath? This was what my friends and I had been discussing all that day, fascinated and horrified at the same time. I wondered if my mother had heard something from someone and misunderstood, thinking it was me instead of Sharona. All the same, I couldn't imagine who would have told her. "No," I said. "I don't have a boyfriend." "Come on," she said with a little laugh. "You can tell me. I'm your mom. If you can't tell me, who can you tell?" "But I haven't got a boyfriend." "Don't lie, Melody." "It's not a lie. Boys are disgusting." "So how come Christy told me different? She says you have a boyfriend called Woody something." Her voice had lost its pally warmth. "No, Woody Finnegan, but he's Sharona's boyfriend, not mine." How could Christy have said that to my mother? She always listened to me and remembered things I said. That was why I loved her more than I loved my own parents, though I felt guilty for that. And whatever I told her, she knew not to tell my mother. She understood what life was like for me at home. I told Christy about Sharona and Woody, not me and Woody, I explained. My mother pulled the car over to the side of the road, switched off the engine, and turned to face me. "Melody, you are going to tell me the truth. You have one last chance. Is that clear? Only one chance." Frozen in my seat, I nodded. As so often when I was with her, the only part of me that could move was the tears. It didn't occur to me to wonder what would happen if I failed at my last chance. I took for granted that my fate would be so unimaginably horrible, so much worse than my day-to-day life, which was plenty bad enough, that it wasn't worth risking. Do you have a boyfriend by the name of Woody Finnegan? Yes, I whispered. You do? Yes. Uh-huh. Since when? Last week. I see. She started driving again. We didn't exchange another word all the way home. I cried, and she pretended not to notice. When we pulled up outside our house, she said cheerfully, Don't think I don't know you've lied to me, Melody. You can't fool me. Woody's not your boyfriend. You told the truth the first time. He's Sharona's boyfriend. I was chatting with her mom while I was waiting for you at the gates. She told me all about it. With that, my mother went inside, leaving me alone in the car, glued by terror to my seat. She had to come out and get me a half hour later. She pretended not to be able to imagine why I hadn't just followed her into the house like I usually did. I couldn't allow myself to think about it while I was with her, so I did my best to act normal. Later, in bed, I tried to figure it out. But the more I thought about it, the less it made sense. Nothing like this had ever happened before. I wondered if trying to get me to lie was going to be her new game, but she never did it again. If I met her today, or in 20 years' time, and asked her what the Woody Finnegan incident was all about, would she tell me? Would she even remember?
Chapter 15, October 15th, 2017. Lynn Kirschmeyer's hair was shorter. She'd had it cut into what Pretty thought of as a serious woman style. It was a haircut that female politicians seemed to go for, Hillary Clinton and Angela whatever her name was, the German chancellor. In her pale gray suit, Lynn could have been a president or a prime minister. In other ways, she hadn't changed at all. She still drank orange juice straight from the bottle, still wore no makeup and too much perfume. She had a colleague with her, a young black man in a blue suit, which he wore with a shirt that was the exact same shade of blue. His tie, at least, was a different color, dark red. Lynn introduced him as Agent Jomo Turiff. It was he who asked Pretty for the full story and told him to omit no detail. If Turiff had ever heard of small talk, he showed no sign of it, not even a one-line icebreaker. Three black coffees later, the two agents were up to speed. Lynn had smiled at Pretty's description of Janelle Davis and Stop It. Turiff had not.
Let me get this right, he said. Taryn Fry admitted she lied about being a detective to get the trash from room 324 from the maid, and she also admitted she'd never saw Melody Chapa alive. She only said so to make sure you took the other sighting seriously. Yes and yes,
Pretty confirmed. In response, Turiff's face moved not an inch.
Do you have the drawing she gave you, the doodle dandy one?
Pretty produced two evidence bags from his pocket and handed them over.
The doodle and the notes from the Crystal Grotto,
he said. Turiff took them without a thank you. The guy was no charmer, that was for sure. After her experience with Sanders, maybe Lynn deliberately avoided working with that type of man. What's your impression of Fry? She asked Pretty.
She's smart, single-minded, a little ruthless, but not necessarily in a bad way. I think she's worried about Kara Burrows and didn't think anyone was taking her disappearance seriously enough. A liar's a liar, said Turiff flatly.
Lynn made a face at him that he couldn't see, but Pretty saw it. It was a, for Christ's sake, get the stick out of your ass face. Liar or no, I agree with her, she said. You should have called us in as soon as Kara Burrows went missing, Orwin. We don't always do what we should, Lynn, as you know. Not that I'm blaming you, she added.
Detective Sanders should have brought us in if he's the one calling the shots. She said his name without missing a beat.
There's something you need to know.
Pretty addressed his words to Turiff.
The jury service Rihanna Briggs wanted to avoid. What about it?
Said Turiff.
At first, I thought that might somehow link to the Chapa's trial, which was the same year, but I was way off the mark there. Rihanna wouldn't have known in advance which case she'd get as a juror, and anyway, Melody's parents were tried in Lehigh County, not Philadelphia. But I couldn't let it go that easy. I thought there has to be something, some connection.
And you found one? Lynn asked.
I did. It goes back to Rihanna Briggs's first jury experience, the trial of Benjamin Chalfant. Far as Rihanna was concerned, Chalfant was undeniably guilty. Others thought so too at first, but got persuaded by a few of his defenders on the jury. In the end, only two jurors stuck with guilty and wouldn't be talked out of it. I know this because Rihanna gave an interview shortly after the trial. She talked about her distress at the injustice of Chalfant's acquittal, her own, and the distress of the only other juror to stick with a guilty vote. When I saw the name of that other hauled-out juror, the one who wasn't Rihanna Briggs, my eyes damn near popped out of my head.
Who?
Asked Turiff.
Christy Reville.
Lynn whistled. At last, a facial expression from Turiff, a frown.
So Melody Chapa's neighbor and babysitter sat on a jury alongside Rihanna Briggs, who works at the resort where guests are claiming to have seen Melody Chapa alive.
Yep,
said Pretty.
And that's not all.
It sure isn't. Lynn pulled her phone out of her pocket, pressed a few keys, then passed it across the table to Pretty.
What's this?
He asked. We're pretty sure Kara Burrows wrote it. She left it as a comment beneath a photo her daughter posted on Instagram. Daughter told father, who told Sanders, who, eventually, way later than he should have, and not exactly willingly or graciously, handed it over to us. She looked at Pretty to see if he'd understood. In all ways that counted, she was now more powerful than Sanders. It didn't matter. That didn't make anything okay. Pretty read the message twice.
I'm in trailer don't know where, 2 hours guess from Swallowtail. Tell police. Interview Jeff Reville colleague again, Ray M. Bloody Sock in car. Car seat move forward, did Christy move
the sock, we think, said Lynn. Cut short, obviously. Why hadn't Kara Burrows been able to finish typing that sentence? Pretty agreed that moot was probably the beginning of move. But the last full use of move was in relation to the car seat, not the sock. Orwin, what are you thinking? He was thinking that he wanted to keep thinking a while longer. Christy Reville was in the driver's seat when Nate Appleyard noticed Melody Chapa's bloodstained sock on the floor of her car. She moved her car seat forward to cover up the sock, but it was too late. Appleyard had seen it and told police. Wait, wait.
I think I know what this means.
Pretty murmured. He half stood up, then sat down again.
If I'm right.
But why had nobody spotted it at the time? It was so obvious once you thought about it. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was only blindingly obvious if you knew what Pretty knew, which currently Lynn and Turiff did not.
I need to tell you something. Something big.
Is this the that's not all you mentioned a minute ago? Lynn asked. Go ahead, tell us. So Pretty told them.
At last, a road. Tall cacti and jagged rocks on the other side, and in the distance, the mountain. Camelback Mountain, or a different one, I can't tell. No cars on the road, not a single one. The road is red sand, like the floor of the Crystal Grotto. I have to stop here. I can't go any farther. I've been running for more than an hour, maybe two. Stumbling, really, more than running. All the bones in my body feel broken, and every part of my insides aches. My bare feet are covered with blood, my ankles swollen. I sink down to my knees when I hear a noise, in case it's a gun being fired, but it's okay. It's nothing. I'm safe. For now. The silence builds around me, making me nervous, and I begin to wonder what the noise was if it wasn't a gun. A car engine starting? Please let a car come. Or a van. Or a person. Anything. Anyone but him. Please. I have to get back home, back to safety, have to make sure my baby's okay. No, not a car, please. On second thought, if a car comes, he might be driving it. He's bound to be. I picture myself at the center of a circle that he's drawn a red line around. He can still get to me, wherever I am in the circle. I have to get out of it, but how can I, when I don't know where the boundary is? I should stand up in case I need to run again, but my legs won't move. The thought of putting my weight on my feet makes me cry. I fall onto my side and lie there for a while on the edge of the grass where it meets the road. There's a cactus near me with leaf tips sharp enough to be lethal weapons. Hearing a rumble, I pull myself into a seated position.